Indeed it is. It's the Roundtable on WAMC, 11 minutes after 9 o'clock. That's Cat Edmondson, Dave Hopper tells me. I guess the kids are dancing to that nowadays, yes. Welcome to the Roundtable on a Thursday morning, the 2nd of October. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We're joined by Alan Shartok. Good morning, Your Grace.
And Your Grace? Good morning to you.
And to Rosemary Armeo, our resident investigative reporter. Hello.
Good morning.
I didn't make any cracks about you being in the lower 48 for an extended period of time today. I just want to let you know.
I'm getting a little antsy. We're going to let that travel. Yeah,
exactly.
That wanderlust.
That wanderlust. And hey, look what the cat dragged in. It's Ira Fussfeld. How you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
Nice to have you here.
It's just a pleasure.
Well, we'll see about that. We can certainly change that fairly quickly. Well, the lockbox, Alan, we're close.
Oh, boy. We're within $2,000 of making it, which is, look, you know, if everything could stop here, that would be terrible. But here's what. We're going to make it. So here's my question to everybody out there, to all our friends, to all our neighbors, to everybody in our community. Should we take this humongous thing out of the gratitude, first of all, the gratitude to the Lennox Foundation for the wonderful thing that they've done here, giving us this $25,000, and to Alan Sagner. But should we put ourselves into a situation where we can actually end the fund drive early, you know, earlier? You know, there are those people who are going to say to me right now, okay, you know, I'm not going to give now that... No, the whole idea here in the locked box always is to knock the fund drive down for those people who don't like it. Now, for me, I love it. I love to be there. I know Ray loves to be there. We're raring to go. It's a great
yes.
time to listen to our constituents and to our companions and to everybody else and to send messages back and forth and to have fun, and you never know what's going to happen. And so I love our fund drives, and I think most people do, and we have evidence that it is the most listened to time of the year. So that is something. But there are people who don't, and they say things like, well, I don't want to listen to the fund drive, and it's on too long. And I say, and I always look at them, and I say, so have you put anything into the lockbox? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's a quote.
That's a quote.
You know, if we ended the fund drive before it starts, if you feed the lockbox, Alan, we'll put you in a studio, and you can pretend that there's a fund drive.
we have a new show called The Fund Drive Show.
We'll just come in. We'll rattle some papers around. You can talk. It'll be like the real thing.
Yeah, just like you are.
Okay, 14 minutes after 9 o'clock. Now on to some business here on the roundtable. As expected, and we've been talking about this for a couple of days, Secret Service Director Julia Pearson has resigned a day after testifying before Congress about the multiple security breaches involving President Obama. Lawmakers pounced on Pearson when questioning her about last month's fence jumper who, with a knife, walked through the White House front door and ran around in circles, apparently. Following Pearson's testimony, it was revealed that days before the breach, Obama shared an elevator in Atlanta with an armed security guard who was also an ex-convict. So who wants to start?
Well, I said yesterday I thought she would be gone within a month. It didn't take that long even. And now, of course, I can afford to feel a little bit sorry for her. I wish she had left before that horrendous display of, I don't know what it was, denial. She didn't grandstand at all.
No, I mean those elected office.
So I think for the rest of her life now, she's going to think about that as a big failure. That's a shame. She did have a 30-year successful career before this.
So what's the lesson to be learned from all of this? I think you've just suggested it. If you see it coming, get out of the way fast yourself before somebody makes you do it.
Yeah, I think she didn't talk about what really happened either because she was trying to hide it or she didn't know. Either one of those scenarios is not good. She needed to get on top of this and to say, okay, yes, I made the mistakes, not mistakes were made in that passive voice. Here's what we're going to do about it going forward. And there just
She did say she took full responsibility.
She said, I take full responsibility. But Alan, you know, if you read about this, everyone pointed out how bland and bureaucratic it was. Her demeanor, her delivery of the line, she just, it's like maybe she had already decided she was going to leave.
Or
I don't
it was
know.
Decided for her.
Yeah.
The die was cast.
And she was forced into, I don't know. Anyway, I'm much more reflective now about what this means to her personally.
So what
we'll
would
go
you
on.
Have, again, one more time, very quickly. What would you have done if you were her?
if this had happened and I had been the boss, I would have called in everyone there. I would have known exactly what would have happened. I would have had a press conference and said, this is what happened. This is the disciplinary action we're taking. And here's what we're going to do in the future. I don't think I would have called for an investigation within the agency. That now has been cast into a bad light. And the Homeland Security is saying, no, we have to make it outside of the Secret Service. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would have been.
No, she clearly did not offer us. You didn't get a sense of reassurance that there when she
definitely
was there. That,
not.
Yeah, but and so it was important that she quit right away. The White House had to have said to her, "Get out," because it's got too many other things going on now, and they didn't need this one as yet another distraction. But I will say, all of that aside, and I don't disagree with her departure, etc. Did you read the story in yesterday's New York Times about the number of breaches of security that
Correct.
Have occurred literally over decades at the White House?
Yeah.
This is not a new development. It seems particularly scary now, but, you know, John Smith was allowed into a meeting with Teddy Roosevelt, and Teddy Roosevelt took the appointment, and then somewhere during the meeting realized that this was garbage,
not,
and that person had a gun.
That's not fair.
Well, but the
Ira,
point is
on,
there
I
are
mean,
there are breaches as long as there has been a White House, and these most recent breaches seem particularly egregious, and I hope that they can fix them. But
I get the feeling that this is more about the guy with the gun in the elevator than the nut running around in circles in the White House. In the New York Times, I believe it was, might have been today, might have been late yesterday, they quote Josh Earnest, the White House press secretary. He said, Ms. Pearson's delay in telling the president about the man in the elevator
was
a crucial part of recent and accumulating reports about the performance of the agency. Apparently, the president found out only minutes before mm-hmm. we found out.
Yeah, you don't have to make a choice. It could be one or both. I wanted to say that the Secret Service doesn't go back all the way to Roosevelt mm-hmm. and to Garfield, who mm-hmm. was walking on the street mm-hmm. when he's attacked, or McKinley, or Lincoln, who was in the theater. There were no guards around mm-hmm. him. This is
no,
a
ushers,
new thing.
Certainly, but no guards. Yes.
So it's very sad that the presidency is a target and that this is required, but the Secret Service has to do a better job than we've seen this one has been doing recently.
By the way, the email address here, I forgot to give that at the beginning, roundtable@wamc.org if you want to weigh in this morning, roundtable@wamc.org. Let's take a short break, Mr. Hopper, then we'll shift gears here and talk about Ebola in Texas.
Support comes from Shedman Custom Woodworks, building garden and storage sheds, gazebos, and outdoor furniture for over 25 years. New Lebanon and Brunswick, New York. Shedman.com for inventory. Center for Better Hearing, Glens Falls, New York. Doctors Susan Boja and Cara Bador providing audiological and hearing health care services in a patient-focused environment. HearingBest.com. And Windy Hill Farm Nursery, Orchard, and Garden Shop, Great Barrington. Offering pick-your-own and fresh-picked apples from their orchard and Windy Hill's unpasteurized, all-natural sweet cider blend. WindyHillFarmInc.com.
Oh, my love, how can I show my love?
Billie Holiday on helium. It's very impressive. It's the Roundtable on WAMC, 20 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ira Fussfeld is here, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, and yours truly, Ray Graff. Hospital officials in Dallas say the man diagnosed with Ebola was sent home the first time he went to the hospital because information that he had just come from Africa was not widely shared. Now health officials are trying to track down anyone who came in contact with the man, including the ambulance crew that took him to the hospital and a handful of school children. The man is being treated at a Texas hospital right now, apparently upgraded to serious condition. However, originally they said there are maybe 18 people that we're keeping an eye on. The news today on the crawl on CNN says that number is now 80. So, ballooning much faster than even we had suspected.
80 because of the people that this guy may have come into contact with.
Correct.
Yeah. And so, he goes home, he visits his relatives, the relatives have children. The children, as Rosemary just pointed out, all go to different schools. And
so different ages, right?
Different ages, they go to different schools, so they may have come into contact with other people themselves. So, this makes it exponential.
Tell me if you think I'm whistling past the graveyard here. We need to know about this, obviously. We need to know what it's from, how it can be spread. The public has to be informed so it could be on the alert. That said, you have to, you can't get this by being breathed upon. You can't get this by sitting next to somebody in an airplane. There needs to be an exchange of bodily fluids, vomit, and diarrhea, and blood. If that occurs, we've got problems. But it's I just don't get the sense that we should all be lying in bed with the covers over.
Do you think that's the way it started in Africa, too? That people were saying, well, we know about this. We've had it here before. We can keep it under control, and it's not under control.
I run the risk of getting in trouble, so I want to be careful how I say this. But I suspect that the conditions in the areas in Africa where this has from which this has emanated may be less sanitary. That seems to be what I've been reading, and that the likelihood of that being spread among common water ponds or whatever are greater, and then the people in that area were not able to prepare for it. They didn't see it coming.
Well, I may be whistling past the gravy. West Africa, and I am not counting this as one country. I am aware that we have many countries, 54 in Africa, but that region of the continent has a hands-on burial policy. They keep people at home, and especially now when the hospitals are overrun, sick people are being kept at home. So yes, it does definitely increase the danger of exposure. But for us to sit back with some of the reassurances we've gotten from CDC also seems a little bit scary to me. This is a virus that's spreading really rapidly, and that increases the chances, as we were talking yesterday, of it mutating. And so it could at some point, we don't know when or how, become transmittable through air. That's a danger. The longer and the wider the epidemic goes, the greater the chance of that.
Well, you know, Rosemary, I keep relating this in my own sort of limited mind to fracking.
The problem with fracking
is we don't know.
Right.
We don't know whether it really does cause earthquakes. Right. We don't know. But what do you do when you don't know? When you don't know, you are very, very careful, and you watch every sort of thing. I'm a pessimist by heart, by nature.
No.
Yeah, I really am, Ray. And you sort of knew that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm a pessimist. I think the only way to play it is to play it as if it's really very dangerous and that you have to be watching it. We're already hearing stories about ratcheting up the amount of antivirals that we have in our medical chest. And one wonders about why we do it here and maybe not there. But okay, we're doing all of that. But I have no doubt is going to be more in this country, and that people are going to get in one way or another, and then it's going to get spread.
You're right. We don't really know. So should we be pulling the covers over our head, as Iris suggested? Not really. But man, the hospitals in this country and the places most likely to see infectious diseases, flu-like symptoms, shouldn't they be on alert? And that's the problem here. This guy, this Liberian man, goes to the hospital. A nurse asks him, have you been to West Africa? Yes, he goes, I'm Liberian. And that's where it ends. No one else hears about it. He's sent home with antibiotics, which of course are completely ineffective against a deadly virus like Ebola. And that's our first line of defense. It was not there.
The fear factor already coming into play. There are reports some parents are keeping their kids home from schools in that area because of the potential that some kids were, again, possibly infected. So I think there's a very fine line that CDC and other authorities have to draw here between being candid and really scaring the daylights out of everybody.
Yep.
It seems to me they're really clamping down, too. There's not been a lot of information coming out. The newspapers have gotten information about this.
And by the way, there is another illness unrecognized or untreatable, as far as I know, that it sounds to me is more damaging immediately, that is spreading among young people, students, in 42 states, I believe, that is leading to paralysis among some of them.
This is the Entero D68.
Yeah, I mean, we don't hear much about that, and we don't hear anything about what the causes and or preventions of that might be. So,
The first death was just reported in the crawl on morning television today.
And
also, do you remember after anthrax, those scares, and suddenly anybody who had been near any kind of white powder was showing up at hospitals? We've got a man in a hospital in Hawaii who fears that he may have Ebola. even though the information is that it doesn't seem to have been near or around any of the factors.
Well, this is all terrible news, but there is some good news.
What's that, sir?
We just heard from our wonderful Megan Finnegan, who says we've just gone over the $300,000 mark
in the, that's great.
In the lockbox, so that we do have, you know, we've made the match. We got that extra $30,000. We thank the Lennox Foundation. We thank Alan Sagner. But most of all, we thank everybody who's done something. And now, let's get another 100 in there, and that'll be 100 less during the fund drive.
So right now, as with the match, we are at the one-third way through the drive.
Yeah, yeah.
But before we start, let's get to halfway.
Well, of course. Maybe we could get all the way.
That would be lovely. You know, we don't have time. Well, we have a couple of minutes, but there was an article that I pulled for all of you from the Washington Post, and the headline says, "Why hasn't the U.S. closed its airports to travelers from Ebola-ravaged countries?"
Mm-hmm.
So in the last minute and a half before we break, I put that to the panel.
Because you can't get Ebola from sitting next to somebody who if they breathed on you. I think they'd rather than to do what this is suggesting to do, they should be more careful about looking at people as they get on.
They
airline.
Do. They take their temperatures.
Is that enough?
Well, let me put it this way. As I said yesterday, Korematsu and the Japanese thing, which was horrible. Lincoln and ex-party Milligan. There comes that point when a society is so in fear that they do things that in retrospect they shouldn't have done. And I'm not so sure that you won't get there. You won't get to raise question in a positive way.
We already are seeing airlines shutting down flights or limiting them from the affected country. So I don't think that's impossible.
Is that a financial decision? Because people are not going.
No, exactly. There's not a lot of not a flights.
You know what? I'd feel a lot better about all of this stuff if I really felt confident that I could believe what all of these agencies are saying.
There you go.
Whether it's the Secret Service or the CDC or the FCC or the FAA or the WAMC. Yep. I mean, no, you know what I'm saying.
Have we reached a new low in skepticism with regard?
It's across society. I mean, the hospital in Dallas, how they didn't treat this. Where is the expertise and where is the truthfulness in this country?
Well, Janet says you're exactly on point, Ira. Thank you, Ira. The panel has been much too hysterical in reacting to the story. The disease does not spread easily. This is not West Africa, where sanitation is poor, healthcare not to be the same standards, and customs encourage the bodily fluid transfer. Rosemary and Alan need to stop spreading the hysteria. Now, enterovirus, that is something to worry about as far as a national health crisis, and that's from
Well, Chad. You see, that's why we have Ira here once every fortnight.
Thank my mother for writing.
The email address, if you'd like to compliment Ira or, take a shot at Rosemary or Alan, roundtable@wamc.org is the email address. We shall break for news, and then we will return.
To the other side.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Thursday morning, 9:36 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, joined today on the vaunted panel by Rosemary Armeo, Ira Fussfeld, and Alan Shartok. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, we have mail.
We do. We have a lot of mail, and people are writing too long.
Okay.
So I'm going to have to edit, and I don't like to do that.
Right. And the rule is a paragraph is good.
Well, a paragraph is too much.
1.5 is over the line.
Sentence and a half is good.
Pithy.
Okay. Bill says about Ebola. There is no reason to believe that the CDC or federal government will be honest regarding how dangerous this is to our country. Our borders need to be enforced 100% right now for a multitude of reasons. And then that's where it stops being enough. Okay.
Okay.
Elizabeth says, Rosemary mentioned the RN who saw the point of being the first line of defense, and I agree. Unfortunately, that first line of defense is often understaffed, sometimes grossly understaffed, especially in ERs. Hospitals view nursing as an expense and will often staff at the absolute minimum. Part of the National Public Health Plan needs to understand standardized nurse-patient ratios. Thank you, Liz. And Jeff says, allowing a traveler with Ebola to enter the U.S. just goes to prove that the TSA is incompetent, agency staffed, and directed by idiots. that puts on a show of frisking babies and grandmothers to lull the American public into a sense of security, in capital letters, that they are doing something by harassing everyday citizens.
I did not write that letter.
Are you sure?
I do support it.
Yeah, right. And I support it. I think, as you know, we all disagree on this one. I happen to think that they're doing a good job. Okay, Marilyn says, you failed to mention that sweat is one of the bodily fluids that spreads the Ebola virus. Is it, guys? I guess so.
It was not on the list, nor was saliva, although those are certainly bodily fluids. It's part of the idea that I think the information coming out is confusing.
You get the feeling we've talked a little too much about bodily fluids over the last couple of years.
No. But if you touch somebody and they told you not to touch somebody, why would they tell you not to touch somebody if sweat is, you know, innocent on that? Okay. And Ryan says, Rosemary should do some investigation into viral mutations. The likelihood of a body fluid transmitted virus mutating into an airborne transmitting virus is a big leap. Are you concerned about the transmission of HIV? It's hysterical to suggest otherwise.
Coming from WHO and CDC have both said that the chances of mutation increase the longer and the wider the epidemic go. I do not claim to be
and they may be covering their fannies.
WHO being the World Health Organization.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, so Jill says, I seem to recall that at one point a few months ago there were airlines that wanted to stop all flights to countries affected by Ebola, and the airlines were asked, I think by the WHO, I'm not positive, to not do that because there would have been better ways or no way of getting health care workers and supplies to the stricken areas. And John says, too long.
Okay.
Hey, gang, thanks always for the great show. Here's my big question regarding the spreading of Ebola. To say it cannot be spread out, spread aside from contact with bodily fluids, well, I think that it is bodily fluids that are moved around from place to place, such as doorknobs and other things. And then it goes on at some great length.
Okay.
Ryan says, just wanted to say that I disagree with ex parte Merriman. Miriam, you know, the Lincoln case. I disagreed with it, too, and said so. I think it was the right decision by Lincoln. Okay. Oh, he disagrees with me. I get it. I think it was the right decision by Lincoln. Had John Merriman been allowed to spread pro-slavery and union rhetoric and propaganda in Maryland, which is already a hotbed of secession activity, Maryland might have left the union. Okay.
Did I miss part of the discussion?
Yeah, I didn't know. Did we talk about that?
Yeah, I did.
He mentioned it in passing.
I did. I said that there were things that we now know were wrong.
I see.
Like the Lincoln decision there to suspend habeas corpus in that way, and also other times when we have done that kind of thing. Mm. And then somebody wants to know, is Ebola spreadable by mosquitoes? Anybody know?
Well, Rosemary's the infectious disease expert.
No, I don't know. Malaria is, but
that's not on the list.
It's blood.
Now, we start from the premise, as I said before, that we're getting accurate and complete information from the government, but mosquito bites are not something that has been put on the list.
But that is actually a fine question because
it's how malaria
into the mosquito
spread.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, if you're telling the relatives of people who are dying not to put their hands on people so that. I mean, it's clear they're getting it somehow, right? What? How would they be getting it other than by putting their hands on, let's say, a sweaty person who's dying?
Well, here's the problem. It's like saying this is a really hard disease to spread, but 5,000 people have it in countries in West Africa. How did that happen? So, I would like more explanation.
By the way, I think I read the statistic that of the X thousands of people who have contracted Ebola, mm-hmm. a third of them have died. Now, that's not an insignificant number, but it does suggest that two-thirds of the people did survive, presumably because they were treated. And since almost none of those diseases have occurred in this country as yet, I will remain confident that once it is recognized, it can be treated. We know it can be treated. We know that the two U.S. health workers who they brought back to this country have survived it. It's seemingly in an area of the world that is less prepared to have the disease that is more easily transmitted.
Okay. Carl says, you are increasing the fear level by setting an expectation that viruses mutate into different transmission vectors. I think what Rosemary said is that it can, or that that it may. There's a difference.
There is a fear that it might.
Yes.
And the CDC is, it's their job to clamp down on information to keep the fear level down. It's not our job to do that.
And Heather says, I agree. Stop being, stop spreading the hysteria.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll never discuss it again.
And then, yeah, right. And then there's one more. CBS TV this morning reported that British Airways had stopped flying to West Africa. A guest said that restricting airline access is the first line of defense against the virus. And, well, we've got about 100 more. And
really?
I think, yeah, well, we've got about 10 more, many of them from people who have already been in the discussion.
Okay, so one to a customer, right?
Yeah, sort of one to a customer,
right.
Unless there's something so extraordinary. Christopher says, have you learned nothing from the anthrax scare? And Nikki says, I forget that one. And okay, it was just about the iPhone.
Oh, I see.
Okay, and Gary says the fact that an infected Ebola victim just flew right into this country with Ebola, then walked around the city of Dallas for 10 days while carrying Ebola, utterly belies the false premise of health authorities who claim to have things under control. Bill says, nope, we're not doing that.
Okay.
I just want you to know what some people do, and I'm never going to do it. They attach an article, and they want us to read the article. That means we have to act. We're not doing that. Okay. And Robert is saying, way too many unanswered questions in Ebola. Why are direct flights from Africa permitted? Harsh, as opposed to what? Two, direct contact. Viral organisms mutate. What if an infected sneeze or cough ever get bacterial or something in quality hospital? What kind of an ED, hands-on antibiotics is this randomly? Anyone remember how AIDS started with one flight attendant? And Sean says, many people purchase care this time of the year. If it is an old car is donated to the program on your website, did this go toward the fund drive? It does. It does. Yes, it does. Okay, and Grace says, oh, no, I don't know. They're, again. Okay, so come on, play by the rules, folks.
Where does the hysteria spread? How much of the blame can be pointed to the cable news networks, which on the one hand are properly trying to inform the public by reporting and discussing something like this, but on the other hand, doing it seemingly wall to wall, so that when you turn on the TV at any hour of the day, there it is, and it permutates into your mind as being the sky is falling. And there are any number of other examples on cable TV that are like this, with the story that becomes wall to wall. And I'm wondering, I'm trying to put myself in the position of the cable, the news director of CNN, for example, who is saying, I have 8 different programs, and each of the programs has a different host, and each of the hosts want to talk about it, A. B, we need to inform the public what's going on and on and on. And versus, are we creating hysteria here?
Do you have any doubt that when you are the temporary head of CNN, I say temporary because sooner or later you'll get fired. Don't you think that the number one thing that your bosses care about is how many eyeballs are on the television?
Well, sure. And as judging from the mail that we're getting this morning, which is of my experience being on this program, more on this subject than on any
Correct.
Other subject, there
a lot
are
of
people
it.
Talking about it.
Yeah,
but there is that line that has to be established.
Openness and discussion is not spreading hysteria. The mosquito bite question, that might be, I don't know, ridiculous or completely salient. We don't know. The fact that we're talking about it does not seem to me to be spreading hysteria. I don't think I'm going to get Ebola, but I do want to know a whole lot more about it.
I think that there is a viewership in this country that is more prone to look at these things less academically and more, here it comes.
But a couple of questions. One, what is the average time spent watching one of those cable
networks?
Well,
that's the point, because you need to, same thing with talk, all news radio stations. Give us 10 minutes, we'll give you the world, because they're going to constantly repeat stories because different people are coming in and out. That said, we do know that there are a lot of people, whether it's this subject or other subjects, who they're colloquially called shut-ins, who are watching this
right.
all day and all night. Now, that may be their problem in their lives, but nevertheless, there are a lot of people who do that, and it's those people who are really getting their heads filled with this stuff. And Rosemary's looking at me quizzically.
No.
Is this a newspaper guy you're talking to trying to say why news coverage is too much?
Mm-hmm. Also, the point was made yesterday that one of the problems in some of the African countries in the spread is that the word doesn't get out as easily. Here, in a way, there is a service being provided. And perhaps it's shrill, and perhaps it's over the top, and perhaps it's too much. That's not for us to say, or at least not for me to say. However, a lot of people know about it, and it's not the government going door to door to tell people about it. They know to take precautions. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, CNN could be defended. Or all the cable networks.
I think it's a tough line that because you have a responsibility to inform, and the question is to what extent and when is it being exploited for ratings.
Mm-hmm. And Jessica wants to know, what are the possible implications of the fact that the state in which there may be potential cases of Ebola did not expand Medicaid? And James says, oh no, we're not reading what James said.
Uh-oh. Okay.
No, it's all right. Don't worry about it. Jay Van Amberg, our friend, writes, congratulations to all of us in the WAMC family on surpassing the $300,000 in the locked box, and then says, please bring back the mighty Chartok players.
Oh, heavens.
Okay.
Does anybody want that?
I do.
I'd rather have wall-to-wall Ebola coverage.
Whoa. Is that a cartoon?
We used to do plays.
It was the play that Brian Shields brilliantly constructed for us.
Well said.
Okay. And Deirdre says, it seems like irresponsible journalism to have a discussion about the serious issue with no experts and each on your simple speculations. You are talking about something you may seem to know a little about. This is not helpful. How about having a show with people who know what they are talking about all day long? We have people who are on our news programs, on everything else. And let me tell you, Deirdre, they are not as one. In other words, they're disagreeing with each other also. So what else can I say?
Well, I could say the email address. It's roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Mr. Hopper, let's take a quick break and then back.
Support comes from Capitol Repertory Theater, presenting a comedy drama, Other Desert Cities, directed by Michael Bush. Now through October 9th, capitalrep.org for tickets. And Hampshire Veterinary Hospital, corner of University Drive and Route 9 in Amherst, Massachusetts, reminding listeners that black pepper-like specks on a pet's coat indicate the presence of fleas. HampVet.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's the panel. It's 9:51 on a Thursday. Ira Fussfeld is here, and Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok, and Ray Graff here, and the mailbag never ends. Is it almost?
No.
Are we almost done with the mailbag?
Well, no.
Oh,
but but Karen says it's a filovirus. It is not spread by mosquitoes. Regards, Karen.
She should know
because she's assistant professor, Center for Immunology and Microbial Disease, Albany Medical College.
Thank you. We do have
good.
Experts. We do have them.
Yeah.
Are we done?
So far, so good.
Okay. Hong Kong police are warning of serious consequences if pro-democracy protesters try to charge or surround government buildings. It seems that either this will go away very soon or this will ignite very soon. Police say authorities will not tolerate any illegal surroundings of government buildings. They're urging the protesters who want to top leader Leung Chun-Ying to resign, to remain calm and restrained. Meanwhile, the biggest paper there, the flagship paper of China's Communist Party, is warning of unimaginable consequences. Rosemary.
Wow. Fascinating story. There's an internet photo running, taken by a drone. And in it, you can see the people who are just absolutely filling the streets of Hong Kong as this protest goes on. It's over a democratic process. They want to elect, they're going to elect a head of the Hong Kong government. And the mainland Chinese government has said, fine, but all the candidates who run have to be vetted by, it's a committee, but basically vetted by them.
Yeah.
And people are saying, no, we want a real democracy. So what's happening now is that they're trying to decide whether they should begin occupying buildings, which, of course, takes it a step further than just being in the streets. It could call down the wrath of the government, or they may just all disperse and go home because they've done what they can.
What's your bet?
I don't know. I don't know. Unimaginable consequences would scare me, but I think they're...
I can imagine an awful lot. I mean, yeah. If they're unimaginable, that's got to be pretty bad.
This is another one of those uprisings where people are risking their lives, and you have to you know, pay respect to that.
You do. Tiananmen Square is all you got to remember.
Right.
You know, it's just too much of a potential loss to the communists or so-called communists who run the government to let it go on. Now, you made a very good point yesterday, Rosemary. I guess it was you who said, well, you know, this is Hong Kong is their sort of outward place where they do their trading and the rest, and they can't afford to have it happen. I think in their minds, in their whatever warped minds, they think that this would be far worse than impeding trade because it would encourage the other places.
They're afraid of it spreading to the mainland, which if there's any hint of that, I think you'd see a crackdown. But also, it would be just a hideous public relations disaster if this financial capital is bathed in blood. So I think they want to avoid that. What they seem to be doing instead is trying to control the news on the mainland. They have China. The Chinese are experts in censorship. Social media does not work there. It's very hard to get through, and they have been clamping down big time on this.
Yeah, you made the two points that I was going to make. One is I wonder whether how many people on the mainland know what's going on in Hong Kong. I suspect that they're doing a good job blocking this news. And secondly, China is becoming more, dare I say, capitalist in terms of the amount of economy that's growing and all the American companies that are building there and retailers that are there. And I don't think that China wants the horrific publicity of a bloodbath, as you say. So I suspect they're going to be very patient over there until it absolutely it becomes too much for them to continue doing it.
Well, they'll use the police, Ira. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
They're not going to use the
army.
They're
afraid to use the police because of these numbers of people. They would be totally overwhelmed if they did that. It's a danger.
Yeah. Well,
and then the protesters in Hong Kong, apparently targets of scrutiny through their mobile devices. Did you see this in the New York Times?
Yes.
Tens of thousands of protesters in Hong Kong continue to shut down the city's main arteries and a call for democracy. A quieter struggle was playing out to monitor the demonstrations online. And apparently there was a bogus app which allowed demonstrators to be tracked.
What does that mean, bogus app?
In other words, it was...
It appears to connect you with other people who are protesting, but in fact, it's monitored by government agents who know who exactly is part of the protest. This is, in academic circles, this is really being looked at, the use of social media and these kind of uprisings that we've seen in Asia and now spreading throughout Africa and Asia and the Middle East. And government, they were first ballyhooed as, wow, everybody can get together, democracy rules, and now we find oppressive governments are using them as a way to track the opponents. It's very dangerous.
Yeah, we'll see how bad it really is if the leaders of these protests disappear or fall out of windows mysteriously in coming months. So we'll see.
Does it ever make you wonder when you read about this and all of the other things we've discussed today and the many other things that are in the headlines that we haven't discussed is why anybody wants to run for president of the United States?
Well, I've thought about that a lot. I watch the color of Obama's hair going to white.
Well, they all do.
They do. It's a huge responsibility.
I don't know if you've talked on this program about that Roosevelt series that was on PBS. And naturally, FDR had physical issues beyond that. But to look at the youthful FDR and what FDR looked like at his death, it's incredible how old he
yeah.
And I didn't realize that I believe he was only 63 when
he
died.
That's what incredible. Exactly what he was. I saw the whole series. I loved it.
Yeah, did you like it?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, I guess we don't have time to talk about the guy with $1,200 worth of meat hidden in his pants.
Oh, man. Let's mention it.
Alas, gentlemen,
I think you need to qualify what that's all about, just slightly.
Well, he stole, he was an employee, and he allegedly stole $1,200 worth of meat, and he hid it in his pants. We're trying to figure out how much meat that actually was.
It had to have been Kobe beef. I mean, how could, you know, that's a lot of hamburger.
First of all, that stuff is expensive these days.
Kobe beef is.
Well, everything is expensive.
Wow, boy, but $1,400 is expensive. How much? $1,400?
Okay, and then also, Johnny Cash did it.
Johnny
Cash stole meat
in his pants?
No, he did it with a Cadillac, one part at a time. Don't you remember the song?
That's
it was
right.
great.
Well, you know, it is the Jewish holidays, and this time of year, a lot of people do eat brisket.
Yeah.
I believe that's what he was carrying was brisket.
Yeah.
So,
Or he
might
was
have
just
had
glad,
a large party.
Glad to see
well,
it.
Well, that could have been.
So, any more email? We have about a minute left.
There's a lot, actually. There is much more. Michael says it takes about 5 minutes to find out this virus will not mutate into an airborne virus. There was even a recent price in Scientific American piece. It says price, but piece in Scientific American about it. Google it. I think to do so only reflects ignorance. I'm sorry to say, said Michael. But Michael, Rosemary was on the program and said she had read it as a possibility from some distinguished scientists, right? From the mutation. Right?
Alan has a good rule that even if you disagree with someone, you don't call it ignorance.
Yeah, because it's not civil and it's not right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
We're
and so then Thomas says, hi, everyone. This is only one of a few thousand cases of a few thousand cases of this in Africa. Although that may seem like a lot, the fact is it's spreading relatively slowly and like that.
All right. Well, speaking of spreading slowly, I must say that this hour
is over.
It has been lovely, and it's been great to be with you all, but we have to call it a day.
Oh, must we?
Yes.
So,
Alan,
call it Thursday.
We'll call it Thursday. Ira, thank you for being here. Rosemary, Alan, thank you at home for listening. The email address, roundtable@wamc.org. Hour two, straight ahead.